When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right, before we start...
Oh! Do you see, this is not great for a podcast, Daz. Do you see how this is flawed?
Well, I see how it's flawed, unless you read the label. I've just handed... we can do a commentary.
Oh, so my dad, painting a word to the left picture of me, has just passed me an aloe vera hand gel, anti-bac.
Yeah, antibacterial hand gel.
I don't really like antibac because it makes your hands really dry. I feel like you need a cream afterwards. Do you have a moisturiser as well?
I don't, actually. Surprising enough,
Do you think this is a nice sound to hear?
It's
a bit like ASMR.
Well, I think... What's ASMR?
What's ASMR? It's audio sensory... I don't know, something. But it's a big phenomenon. People, it's like... It'd be like something like this. If you're just quiet.
I've read about it.
Or people would whisper. So we'd do this whole podcast. We'd be like, so there's been a coronavirus worry. Like that. And then it like calms people. People go to sleep to it and stuff.
Yes, I see. It is a big thing on the internet at the moment. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think there's an organisation which is simply called Calm, and they've set up a thing where they want you to download the app, and it'll help
no,
you
that's
get to
the
sleep.
Meditation app, Calm.
Right,
that's different. This is it stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response.
Right.
It's a tingling sensation that typically begins on the scalp and moves down the back of the neck and upper spine. A pleasant form of paresthesia.
Mm.
It has been compared with auditory tactile synesthesia and may overlap with frisson.
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 Mm. Good. Right. Should we start?
We should probably explain why you've just handed me antibacterial gel.
You've come from what was Coronavirus Central, but isn't anymore because there's been a couple of cases now
of there was one in... Where was the other one?
London, I think there was one, and maybe
was,
one somewhere else.
There
By the
was
time
one
this
somewhere
goes
really
out,
quiet, which I was surprised about, because you usually would imagine it big cities. Although, actually, you could say the same about York. Really, you'd expect it to the epicentre of the...
Well, yeah, the thing about York is you do have a lot of Chinese students.
International students, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
But a lot of them are Chinese.
We do, yeah. But probably no more than in, like, most universities.
No, there seems to be lots in Leeds as well.
We should also probably explain, just say welcome. This is Ruthie, uni dad and me, the podcast. I go to the University of York, hence the coronavirus conversation.
Mm, we could say...
You know, just to contextualise a little bit.
Do you know what your problem is, Ruth?
What?
You've watched too much television where they go... Actually, you've only got to have an ad break for about 20 seconds.
I like
go
it.
Over
I,
what's
you forget
happened.
People are really stupid. I need... I need people to go over what's going on. I forget, if not.
Ruth is my daughter.
I'm just imagining that we're picking up just thousands of new listeners every week, you see?
Right. Yeah. Ruth is my daughter. She's at the University of York studying French, Spanish and linguistics. And
but really just French and Spanish.
There has been an outbreak of coronavirus, which is...
There's been two cases.
Two cases.
I don't think one that counts
whom,
as an outbreak.
Yeah, but one of whom was a student at York University, or is a student at York University.
Was. Gone now. She's been kicked out. I don't even know whether it was a boy or a girl, actually.
No, they kept the details very sketchy, haven't they?
Weirdly, though, we were talking about whether it was a boy or a girl, because I kept referring to it as her, them as she... Because I don't know why. And then all the boys were referring to them as he. And I was like, oh, is this just because we all imagine ourselves as the person? Like, I thought that was really interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah, like, what? Like I, in my head, she was just a girl, obviously, of course. Like, why would she be a boy? And then all the boys were saying, oh no, I've always imagined them as a boy in my head.
But using the correct pronoun in them.
Yes.
Although you're imagining a girl, the boys are imagining a boy, and then there's that whole spectrum in between.
There we go, Gammony.
I'm being the exact opposite of Gammony. You people are being Gammony, saying it's got to be a boy or a girl.
Genders. See, but now you're making fun of that. That's why it's bad. You're making a mockery.
No, but it is interesting that you all imagine boys and girls, just boys and girls.
I don't think that's interesting at all. I think it's mundane.
So, having survived the coronavirus outbreak, what particularly is on your mind? What's been going on? You're at home this weekend because you've got a reading week, haven't you?
I've got a reading week coming up in the next week, but I am going to go back. I'm not spending the whole week at home because I would definitely not do anything and I would eat all the foods that are at home.
Yeah, I know. You had a two-course breakfast this morning. First you had your eggs, then you had your cereal. Interesting order of breakfast, because normally your cereal would be your first course.
Just so the people who listen to podcasts don't get the wrong idea, I had one egg and a small slice of toast and a very small bowl of cereal. I didn't eat like four eggs and four slices of toast and then two bowls of cereal, you know? I don't want to paint the wrong picture.
No, but we're delighted. I'd like to see you eating, because obviously when you're... and you were complaining this morning about the breakfast at the university where the toast is never warm.
No, it's toast, so the butter spreads but doesn't melt, which is painful. I would say.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Mm. So you're home anyway
I'm home because I was absolutely starving. No, I'm home just to decompress a bit, along with a lot of people, actually. Someone was saying the flat is very quiet this week, and a lot of people on my course have also, I think, gone home for the weekend and stuff. Because we've got this reading week, but also I think we're going into week six, I believe, which is pretty much the middle of the term. So I think by this point, you kind of...
Want to have some warm toast.
One toast, if one toast was a metaphor for the comfort of being at home and the familiarity.
And watching the TV, because you don't watch any TV at all.
Not really, no.
Uni. Or you must watch stuff on Netflix.
A little bit, but not tons. Yeah. I watch a bit of stuff, but really not that much. No, nowhere near as much as I did when I was at home. Just been enjoying sort of decompressing a bit and being nice.
But you must, when you're at uni, you must Netflix and chill. You taught me that.
Yeah.
I thought that was good. I thought that just meant you had a quiet night watching Netflix.
That's not what that means at all. Netflix and chill means...
Oh, is it a...
Is a euphemism.
For sex?
Yeah. It means inviting someone around to watch Netflix with the intention that actually you won't be watching Netflix. And it is a disturbing thing to have your dad ask you if you do.
Right. Do you know, I just thought it meant Netflix and chill. And you did explain it to me earlier on in an earlier podcast. So I would recommend you go back through all the 80-odd podcasts and see if you can find the Netflix and chill episode. And then we'll know. And you won't make the same mistake as I made, asking your student daughter if she's Netflixed and chilled. Netflix and chilled. Yeah, I suppose you could use it as a verb.
But you wouldn't do Netflixed and chilled. You'd just do Netflix and chilled. Anyway, we were talking about home. So home, I want to talk a little bit about. Because, this is the first weekend that I've been back. This is probably the longest, actually, that I'd not... This is probably the longest I've gone without... And without having seen Mum as well, because I don't see her as regularly. It was very strange when I first arrived home and I was like, again, just, it's so weird because I think, so they talk a lot in various different films about kind of you move out of your family home and then you don't really have either home or whatever. I'm sure that must be true and it must be really weird to experience that kind of just you're yet to make a home for yourself, but you also really don't belong to your family home anymore. Whereas I think at university, you do very much still belong to your family home, but you also don't in a way, which I think is a more... I've yet to experience feeling not that your family home is your home anymore, but I think it's a really unsettling thing of being like, oh, neither of these places are quite home yet, because university, as much as I really enjoy it and I like my little room and I feel very safe and warm there and whatever, it's not quite the same as when I lived at home full time, and then coming back to home, it's also again just...
Well, you've got space at home as well. I mean, the difference for you is you have a very small room and you're all on your own. When you're at home, you've got three floors and you can...
About freely.
Well, you can. It's all...
I'm not like a gazelle who needs, like, open spaces.
No, but you have... That's a crucial difference for you. The interesting test will be next year when you move into a house with fellow students.
I think
students.
A house will probably feel more like you can make a proper home there, because... It will feel less like you're on some weird kind of permanent residential thing, which it kind of does feel like you're at uni. Although I will really miss living on campus, actually, because it's very nice being able to roll out of bed and to your seminars and lectures and whatnot.
I think the dream, you know, as you go through your adult life, your dream will be being that close to work. You can just walk. That's why city centre flats suddenly became very popular.
Yeah.
Because people can get out of their flats and walk to work.
I'll still be able to walk to university, but it'll take me about 25 minutes, which is not a big deal really at all, but not the same as just kind of... I wake up at the moment at like 8:30 and I can be at my 9 o'clock like very easily. And that would be me getting up quite early. I can get up at like 8:45 and still make it.
And you've obviously relished being away from home. You know, you've taken to it like a duck to water. You've loved it all the time. What if you'd been taken away from home at the age of 8 years old? What's your view on boarding schools? Let me just tell you the story. The first state boarding school for children as young as 8 is to open in September, catering for two-parent working families who are fed up with trying to juggle careers and childcare. It's a place for Wyndham College in Norfolk, Wyndham College Prep School in Norfolk. It'll have places for 450 boys and girls from the age of 4 to 11. They can board from the age of 8 in dormitories run in a homely style, it says, with teddy bears, tuck boxes, bedtime stories, and Mabel, a Labrador, to cuddle. So they're clearly trying to replicate some sort of home thing, but being away from your parents at the age of 8.
I think 8 is young. That is very, very young. And I don't know whether it would just make you incredibly like distant from your parents, which I can't imagine is a particularly good thing. But then I really don't know. I mean, I know some people who started boarding when they were like 13, 14 who have met at uni, and they seem to like have loved it, and it's been just so much fun, and they are more independent, I would say, than the people who have lived at home their whole lives. People used to get boarded at like 5 years old, didn't they in the day.
They did, as young as 5, and that was when we had an empire, and there was obviously people went out, you know, mother and father went out to India to do some sort of government thing or whatever, and you would find very young children boarding. But over the years, there's been so many different experiments at bringing up children and which is the best way. And in Israel, well, I was on a kibbutz years and years ago, and they used to take the children away from the parents. Once the children were no longer breastfeeding, they would take them away from the parents, and they lived in the children's house. They actually lived there in a children's house. That was, and they may still do, I don't know, but that was the sort of kibbutz way, and it was like a socialist thing. It was part of the philosophy.
It's as ancient as in the Republic by Plato, which he is arguably like kind of the first, what every dystopian novel is based upon. He says that children should be raised in a commune without their parents, and that's the best way to raise children. It's not a new It's not a new thought. It's not a particularly revolutionary idea that children as young as 8 should be taken away from their parents. But
so
in the Republic by Plato, the reason it's based...
When did you read the Republic, by the way?
I've read quite a few extracts of it when I was studying 1984, because a lot of George Orwell's ideas for 1984 come from the Republic, and also ideas from kind of The Handmaid's Tale, Fahrenheit 451. Basically, all dystopian fiction takes a lot of influence from the Republic.
I was wondering about that, because, you know, when you've been at home, I've never...
It's a bit too highbrow for me.
Well, no, you've never said, sort of, when we're having tea or something at home, you've never said, oh, that's it, now I'm off to read Plato's Republic. You're more likely to say, I'm off to watch Grey's Anatomy rather than Plato's Republic. Fair comment.
I'm just expelling air, because that's how annoying you are. But the reason I think so many dystopians have been based on it is because it's probably a kind of a dangerous way to raise children, in that they all end up thinking the same. But I don't know whether that's maybe a bit of a stretch at 8 years old to go boarding. But I just think when I was 8, I wasn't ready to... bored.
No, well, you weren't really ready at the age of 19.
Eighteen. But no, but I doubt any. I mean, being ready is such a kind of ridiculous thing to say because no, I wasn't ready when I was 18. But. Or I didn't feel ready, but then you are ready because you just do it. Like, I'm sure if I'd have been 8 and you'd have put me in a boarding school, I would have just eventually been like, well, this is it, you know, have to get on with it or whatever. Like, I think the idea that you ever feel ready for anything is probably not true.
It's been a bit of a kerfuffle about the fact that...
Oh, a kerfuffle.
A kerfuffle, yeah. What is it? A kerfuffle, an imbroglio, if you like, if you don't like kerfuffle, about a couple of new musicals that are opening in the West End, one of which is based on Pretty Woman. Pretty Woman, which you'll have seen with Richard Gere and Julia Roberts. Are you singing the song? Is that what you're doing? What's the song from Pretty Woman?
Oh, Pretty Woman.
The Roy Orbison song, of course it is.
What's the song from Pretty Woman? Oh, Pretty Woman.
Yeah, the Roy Orbison. Well, I didn't know what you were doing because it seemed a different...
I was walking down the street.
So you were doing Roy Orbison?
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. You know how much I love Roy Orbison? Don't forget my funeral. Blue Bayou.
Roy Orbison, I almost said Bye Bye Baby, but that's not what
that would be too obvious, really.
That's what they have in Love Actually.
Well, what's your view on prostitution? Because if you see Pretty Woman's made into a musical, also Indecent Proposal, which you haven't seen, has also been made into a musical. And they're both starting at the West End, and people, women's societies, etc., are getting annoyed about this because they say it's a sort of skewed vision of prostitution, which is not all about Richard Gere and Julia Roberts. It's more about trafficking women from Eastern Europe.
Yeah. I don't know whether anyone particularly watches Pretty Woman as a gritty documentary about the horrors of prostitution and sex work, though, do they?
No.
Does anyone really think that, that's what it must be like?
Well, no, of course they don't.
You know, but if
I was to turn to you and use that argument against women's groups who are complaining about Pretty Woman, you would tell me
your pen at me.
You would tell me I'm not being woke.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't at all. I'd say I think you've been fair enough, really.
You're fine with Pretty Woman?
Yeah, I mean, I understand how it's not a great feminist film, and it does give a wrong representation of sex work and stuff. But,
Do you enjoy the film?
But it is just a story, isn't it?
The film's just a hokey?
I really enjoy the film. I think it's fun.
Ah, right. But... that explains everything.
But it is, isn't it? I don't watch it as if it's real at all. But then, and at what point do you have to draw the line of being like, this is just a story, you know?
But you enjoy Pretty Woman, and it's just a...
For what it is.
Yes, it's a vacuous entertainment that you enjoy, fine.
Yeah.
And you're happy with that. What about vacuous entertainments that we gammons enjoy?
Like what?
Benny Hill used to...
No, I think anything that's racist... There has to be a line somewhere, you know?
Who decides what's racist? Benny Hill used to do a Chinese character, so he would...
But he's not Chinese.
Benny Hill's not Chinese? God, when I saw those sketches... Benny Hill's not Chinese, why shouldn't he do it?
Because that's for Chinese people to decide. If it makes them feel uncomfortable, if it's... say that it's like cultural appropriation or whatever...
But the thing about Benny Hill, this is an old argument.
If a massive group of prostitutes said, Pretty Woman makes me feel uncomfortable, I don't think it's right, I think it portrays our career in a vapid way, I would say, okay, well, we won't put the musical on and I won't watch the film anymore. Done. There's plenty of things in the world. Why do you need to watch Benny Hill?
Why do you need to watch Pretty Woman?
Well, that's exactly what I said.
But what I'm saying is, the finger-pointing about racism, sexism and all that is just sort of selective. If you enjoy something... I mean, I'm quite happy with Pretty Woman. I thought it was codswallop, to be honest. But I thought it was a rubbish film. But I'm quite happy for you to enjoy Pretty Woman.
But that's different. Enjoying Pretty Woman, because it's quite it's a little bit misogynistic and, it's not great or whatever, is different to something that is just blatantly racist. Let's not put them in the same category. I don't think it's fair.
Well, yes, I would put Pretty Woman in the same category as Benny Hill, comedians that people don't like from the... I mean, I'm quite happy with anybody not liking anything. Benny Hill's funny, yeah. Benny Hill's a bit of a genius, I think.
But then, I just don't think it would be okay for someone to do, blackface. and it for it to still be shown. Like, you wouldn't read, like, that's a different, it's a different degree.
No, I think the thing with blackface, unless you happen to be the Canadian Prime Minister, the thing with blackface is everybody has decided that blackface is wrong, and I'm perfectly happy with that. So that is a decision everybody's taken. But nobody has sort of stepped back and taken the decision that musicals about prostitution are wrong, and I just want to know why. Now, in a recent podcast, Ruth, I said, what's on your mind? And you very kindly said nothing. What's on your mind this week?
This is what's on my mind. I was looking at university stories, doing my research, because I'm an excellent partner for you. Anyway, no, so what's on my mind is there's a student mental health crisis, which I don't think is like a new thing. It's like 17% of 18 to 20-year-olds say they're clinically depressed and stuff. Like, I don't think it's particularly...
No, there's been lots of those stories.
There's a lot of those stories. It was a story in the BBC News that says, would parents be told about student mental health crisis? So one student in particular, I assume it means. And it says, universities need to be much clearer about whether they will contact parents if students have a mental health crisis, says a social mobility charity. And I was just wondering, if I went to... So the facility that's at the University of York is a thing called Open Door, which is... where you can go and talk to. I don't know whether they're therapists or social workers or what their actual title is. I've never been, but and I know a lot of people do use it, and it's an opportunity to like speak to someone about issues, like whatever you've got going on if you need to. And I just wondered whether you would want to be informed that I'd gone and used the facility.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Because but then do you think that students would be less likely to use it if they... did go.
Ah, that's a good point. So, if,
you know, like, I think you can kind of make a bit of a parallel with sexual health facilities. I think that if your parents were informed every time you went, if you went to get the morning after pill or condoms or whatever, then you just wouldn't use it.
Difference.
You know what I mean?
I think there is a difference.
But is it not? Is it kind of the same thing with mental health services?
I see. I was looking at it from my point of view. I'd want to know. Your mum would want to know, definitely. Mm. But if what you're saying is students would be inhibited at saying they've got a problem, I think probably there's going to have to be some sort of decision by the people. And I suspect they've made the decision.
Well, I think one of the problems that they were saying in the story is there is no clear rule. There's no rule whether it's complete confidentiality or whether they are allowed to speak to the students. And they say in one of the lines in the article was that it's a lottery whether parents get to know or not. And I think that's where the problem is.
Yeah. Because, well, these people you see at Open Door, they're not mental health professionals.
They're probably not clinical therapists or anything like that, but they are professionals. So, yeah.
Well, you would hope that as mental health professionals, they would decide if further help was needed, if proper professional therapy. I mean, they're a first
mental
call,
health practitioners.
They?
That's what it is.
Yeah. So that's a first call. They're not absolute. I mean, your parents would want to know. You know, does my child need more treatment? Do I need to take the child off to to the GP and from there maybe some specialist treatment?
Yeah.
You need to
but
know
then,
the
like,
level.
I just think that if I knew that if I went, my parents would find out, I don't know how likely I would be to go. I'm very lucky in that I've never had any, like, proper mental health problems, so I've never been in the position. But I just think that, like, stuff like that maybe has to be completely confidential. But then also, is that just going to make a problem worse? I don't know.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Shall we have a bit of music, Dad?
Let's have a bit of music. I've gone full-on jazz this week.
Whoa.
Yes,
words in
jazz.
It or not?
Sorry?
Any words in it?
No, it's...
Just full-on jazz?
Full-on jazz. It's Duke Ellington. That's one of the most famous jazz tunes of all time.
Makes me feel like I'm in an old film.
Well, it has been used in a Woody Allen film, obviously.
Yeah, probably. But no, it makes me feel like I'm in, you know, that bit in It's a Wonderful Life when she's walking down the street in that very, like, glamorous dress and she's like, oh, this is just what I wear when I don't know what to wear or whatever. It makes
My friend Gloria Graham. I've told you this before.
Oh, you interviewed her.
I interviewed Gloria Graham. Now, that was Take the A-Train by Duke Ellington's Orchestra, written in 1939 by a guy called Billy Strayhorn. I mean, you can enjoy your
I enjoyed
jazz.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
I should listen to jazz more often for when I'm, like, reading or doing work or whatever, because I always put on like either lo-fi hip-hop beats with no words or like study music or like film soundtracks and stuff. But
so
I should go to jazz
a
bit
whole
more.
Lot of sites that give you music
just Spotify
them.
Yeah Spotify. If you put in like reading on Spotify, it comes up with loads of playlists that are just for to read to or whatever, but yeah. I should go for jazz more often.
Yes. Take the A Train, of course, is a reference to the A subway service that runs through New York City.
Of course.
Yeah. Going at that time from Eastern Brooklyn on the Fulton Street line, opened in 1936, up into Harlem and Northern Manhattan, using the 8th Avenue line in Manhattan, which was opened in 1932. Would you like to know a bit more about Duke Ellington?
I mean, I'm happy to know more about Duke Ellington. I feel like I know enough about the A Train now.
Okay, Edward Kennedy, known as, because he wasn't a real Duke, in the same way Count Basie wasn't a real Count, and Dr. Fox wasn't a real Doctor, or indeed a real Fox. Edward Kennedy Ellington, I mean, he's such an iconic figure. There was a chap I used to know, he used to write rugby league reports, and he had to come up with another name because he was writing for The Guardian and The Observer. So he had to put a different name for both papers. And so his real name was in The Observer. And in The Guardian, he called himself Edward Kennedy because he was that, you know, Duke Ellington was such an icon. American composer, pianist, leader of a jazz orchestra, which he led from 1923 until his death over a career spanning more than six decades. And he played the Leeds Centenary Festival. This was Centenary of the City of Leeds, your favourite place in the world.
My favourite place in the world?
Yep, he played the Leeds Centenary Festival in 1958.
What's the Centenary Festival?
It was the Centenary of Leeds, you know, as a city. 1958 was the
Leeds
Centenary
Festival. Oh my gosh, as if we've only been around for like...
Well, it must be that Leeds sort of being
must have
founded.
Been something.
Well, I think it was Leeds being founded, the Leeds City Council being founded right. as a city. Leeds, I mean, clearly Leeds as
yeah,
a place
obviously.
Has been around, you know, much, much longer than that. The Centenary was Leeds Town Hall, actually, which was built between 1853 and 1858.
That's a good bit of knowledge, you know, Dad,
it's
isn't
fantastic.
It?
Well, I love my city, Leeds, which is Manchester, actually. But yeah, it
which
was,
do you prefer, Manchester or Leeds? Now, be careful here.
Yes, I love both.
Manchester is a great city.
Manchester is a great city.
Manchester or London, that's where I want
to
move to.
What's not often known about Leeds is it's a great jazz city. Leeds is, a lot of jazz musicians played in Leeds.
Really?
We've got the Leeds Music College, very, very highly thought of. So Leeds, interesting the way cities get an identity, because Manchester is a real choral city, you know, choral music. Chetham School, I think it's called in Manchester, where, you know, they have a really famous choir and all that. But Leeds, so Manchester more vocal. Leeds more instrumental. What's your tune?
My song this week is very Root One, I think. It's a song called Brazil by Declan McKenna.
Yeah, that is very Route 1. It's
very, very Route 1. It's Declan McKenna is a singer-songwriter from Enfield in Great London. Who's from Enfield?
Who's from Enfield? I don't know anybody particularly from Enfield.
Whose surname is Enfield?
It's North London now. It used to be Middlesex.
Harry Enfield.
Harry Enfield, yeah.
Who's he?
He's a comedian.
Ah, there we go. Anyway, so he's from Enfield in Greater London. He's only 21
he
now.
He looks very young on the
Yeah, he
YouTube.
Is very, very young. But he's been around. This was from his album in 2017, which would make him scarily my age. So he was part of Glastonbury's Emerging Talent Competition 2015, but he's very, like, girls my age, all the ones who are into him. He's very, like, that kind of basicness or whatever. And I'd never listened to him because I thought, oh, Declan McKenna, like, no, obviously not. But then someone was like, oh, just listen to, like, some of his songs from his this album, which is called What Do You Think About the Car? And I did give the album a listen, and this is by far his most famous, most popular song. So
sounds like the Loving Spoonful, or one of those. Do you remember the Loving Spoonful? You sang it on the car, so Do You Believe in Magic?
Oh, okay, yeah. No, I do
sounds
remember
a bit like
that.
It sounds like a sort of 60s just Californian laid-back.
But really just, like, good tunes and stuff, and they're very nice to listen to. So I thought I'd play that this week as something quite chilled out. And it's also, interestingly, the song Brazil that I played was a protest song about the Olympics that were held there, you know, because obviously there was a lot of... There's, like, huge poverty in Rio, but they still... They, like, cleared favelas
they cleared
and stuff.
The streets,
and
it's,
it was just really quite bad.
Got a couple of emails. Nicholas Hart. What I like about Nicholas Hart is his either website or Twitter handle or whatever is Nick_HartyJoke. So
that's
bless him for that. He's enjoying the podcast. He's providing a 40-something dad of teens like me enough nostalgia from 90s uni days, so from his own days at uni, with a glimpse of what an empty nest is going to look like all too soon. Thank you very much indeed for your email, Nick. Neville Ward says, thank you both for another hugely enjoyable podcast. He also says, I can't claim to be an expert on the Harry and Meghan departure, but it does occur to me...
Gosh, it feels like ages ago that.
It does. Well, of course,
we did miss a week.
We did miss a week. But it does occur to me that you can't seem to comment on anything in relation to someone of a different race or religion these days without it being labelled as racism.
I don't think that's true.
He says, it is possible to simply not agree with someone because of what they say or do without it being racism, says Neville Ward. A review that a lot of people have.
I agree with that. I just don't think it's true in the Meghan and Harry debate.
I went to a mixed race school in the 80s. I was friends with some of the black children in my class, but wasn't friends with some of the others. And the same can be said of the white children. Friends with some, avoided others. And I certainly wouldn't consider myself racist. Do you think anybody does, you know, do you think anybody would ever consider themselves, would say, there must be a few people in the world. I think there are.
I think barely anyone does, though. I think people can be pretty, like, even if you've ever watched Louis III's documentaries
about
the...
Do you think some people who would say, I'm racist and proud of it, I don't mind being racist?
But even if you look at so Louis III's documentaries about the Westboro Baptist Church, who were the coined, like, the most hated family in America or whatever, even they have all these signs that are, like... I mean, this is more about homosexuality because that's what they're really truly against, although I'm not sure they're a massive fan of black people either. And they have the signs that say, like, God hates fags and all those kind of things. Even when you ask them, they're like, oh, no, we don't. You know, it's just God's work or whatever. Like, I think a lot of people use things as an excuse and be like, oh, I'm not racist, but...
He adds on his email, it just seems to me that we're too quick to label comments and criticism as racism. There does seem to be...
I'm not sure how true that is, to be honest.
See, I think there is. I think there's a lot of finger-pointing. You know, not just racism, but homophobia. And they're all... I think it's Twitter, really.
Maybe you just feel like
Twitter
there's a lot of...
networks.
Yeah, I think that's true. But maybe also there's something to be said of maybe you just feel there's a lot of finger-pointing because no one used to get called out on it. Like, I don't feel like there's particularly more finger-pointing.
Richard Alban writes, says, look after yourself, Ruthie. Regards, Richard. He says, and obviously he's referring to the coronavirus. So
it was I got a lot of Twitter things of people tagging me and saying, careful and stuff. Yeah. I had just a ton of my friends screenshot the story and just were like, whoa. Had a lot of that. One of my friends at university, got a message from like an old family friend. And I'd written down the message, but I've left it at uni.
Oh, good.
And basically I can remember it. And it just said, hello, full stop. Really just thinking about you, full stop. Remember to take a lot of precautions, full stop. Much love, full stop, or whatever. Just like a very... a typical like 50-year-old woman message, and just a family friend that they hadn't heard from she hadn't heard from in ages, just a message of them being like, I'm genuinely really worried about you, which I thought was quite funny.
Well, we finally got you on my radio show, but I did it on the day that talking about coronavirus a wee bit, but on the day that the outbreak started, I got a message from Matt, who's very much our custodian of this, saying, if only there was a presenter on talk radio who had some contact with somebody at York University who could talk about the coronavirus. And I thought, if only. And we nearly got you on, but not quite, but we did this week. And I mean, I was interested, just while we're on the coronavirus, about the Chinese students or international students who might or might not be Chinese who've had a bit of abuse in York.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much, like...
We got
about three or four emails as it was happening. We got about two or three in the same day that was like just keeping you updated with like what was going on and stuff. We had another on the 7th of February that was like, oh, university is opening as usual. General advice was like, just wash your hands and stuff. There was one day we woke up and there was like just tons of posters across the whole of not only the like public toilets in buildings, but also the toilets, the shared toilets in, because I share a bathroom, so the shared bathrooms in your accommodation that had like coronavirus help or whatever, that was just basically just saying wash your hands, which I thought at 19 most people kind of did, but apparently not.
No. But it's washing your hands all the time, and washing your hands for a long time, I'm told 20 seconds,
washing hands. People, yeah, and like washing all the backs of them and stuff, that's how you're meant to wash your hands. But I mean, when was the last time anyone did that?
Well, I'm doing it all the time because I have contact with you who are in York University. So that's why I bought the back stuff with me.
We got an email from the Vice Chancellor and like USU, which is a students' union, that basically just said, we've had some reports from students and staff of abuse and racism linked to the current coronavirus. These instances have occurred both in person and online, and we want to condemn these actions in the strongest possible terms. Any act of abuse or inflammatory hate speech, whether it occurs on campus, online or elsewhere, will not be tolerated. Blah, blah, blah. We must ensure that we continue to be a community where every member accepts their obligations and responsibilities to each other in order to live, learn, work and research in a peaceful and supportive environment. That was the basic gist of the email.
But some people were walking crossing the road.
Yeah, that was the big stories. But I also haven't seen anything firsthand.
Chinese
so I don't
students,
know.
Are they wearing masks?
A lot of the Chinese students are, because they do. That's like a cultural thing, because they do at home as well, you know. So yeah, I know there was a shop in York that like had sold out of their masks, but I really don't understand that, because there's been so much scientific research that says like literally it does nothing. Like nothing. It's going to get in.
Well, I was in Chinatown on Friday in Soho, and there were loads and loads of people walking around wearing the masks. But the amusing part of this story is that, you know, in restaurants I like to go to a lot of the same restaurants because I get the handshake. They know me. And we all know the story. Dad loves the handshake in the restaurant. And as we were walking out of the Chinese restaurant that we normally go to, the proprietor came up and gave me a hearty handshake, and I shook hands with him. And my friend Paul, who I was with, I thought he shook hands with him, but I thought it was sort of like a little half-hearted. And when we got out, Paul said to me, I thought twice about the handshake.
Oh,
I know is terrible. It's probably slightly minor, you know, racist in a minor sort of key.
Very much so, I think. But I do think there's genuinely actually a massive problem in that when there is like an outbreak like this, and you can liken it to the Ebola virus, which was then became like an African outbreak, you know, and it was it's African people who are more likely to have that or whatever, and then this one's become like a Chinese thing, and that is completely wrong, because Chinese people at the University of York are no more likely to have the coronavirus unless they've been to Wuhan in the last 14 days or whatever.
But it's a bit racist, you not knowing the name of Wuhan and calling it Wuhan.
I thought it was Wuhan.
It's Wuhan.
Wuhan, yeah, but really, they're no more likely to have it, and it is completely wrong, and I would have thought, I hope that at the university especially, because that's where I am, that people are a bit more tolerant than that.
Yeah, well, Hugh Besson will be glad to have your views on it all, because he writes regularly to the podcast, and he said, I thought it'd be interesting to hear from Ruth what the management have done, said, advised or otherwise. Well, you've had all the emails and the posters. Is there panic in the streets? Probably no.
Not really.
He says, also, as an empty nest to myself, one of the best things is the freedom from being taxi service chief cook and bottle washer, Martin. Have you and your wife enjoyed getting your independence back? I'm not sure, because I, you know me, I like to get in the car and
drive. You like to be needed, don't you?
I like to be needed, I do. And I like to get in the car and drive you somewhere or pick you up.
You also, like, I used to have, like, friends around quite a bit. Even if I had them round at, like, night time or whatever and we were going out, even if we were up till like 12 or half 12 in the kitchen, you never really minded that. I think you both quite enjoy, you're both quite social, I think, which means you quite enjoy like when the house is got lots of people in it and whatever.
And I'm a performer, obviously. And I do, if I've got a joke I want to share with you and your friends, I will do.
Which obviously I've always just so enjoyed and never felt even mildly embarrassed.
Steve Hurst says, regarding personal contributions to abating climate change, you know, we were saying how much can you do on a personal level. He said, I already have given up the car and will not be flying to my holidays anytime soon. How do I do it, you may ask? Easy. Get yourself a part-time job at one of Britain's major supermarkets as your only source of income. Brackets, other badly paid jobs are available. Love and carbon footprints, says Steve. If you do want to send us an email, by the way, we'd be thrilled to get it. Mm-hmm. It's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. So that's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
All one word, martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. And if you also want to get a little bit more involved, you can go over to Spotify and listen to the Spotify playlist. If you search Martin and Ruth or Martin and Ruth Podcast or Ruthie, you need dad and me, or Ruthie, me and my dad, or any of the above. Got one more other thing that I wanted to speak about, Dad. Oh. There was a video and it says, student rape reports, the battle to be believed. Three women who reported being violently sexually assaulted by fellow students, this is in the UK as well, including one woman who says she was bitten and left with bruises, have told the BBC that the perpetrators got away with it. A number of UK universities say they are taking action to improve safety on campus, but as reports of sexual misconduct at universities rise, questions remain about how seriously the issue is being taken. And I just think that is so, so, so interesting that reports of sexual misconduct have risen. Like, I assume that's also because women are more likely to step forward because they feel like it's less taboo with stuff like the Me Too movement, and just generally as people, time progresses, we get more tolerant and stuff. But I do think that's... I am surprised that there's been three instances in which universities have not believed the students. It always has seemed like such an, in a weird way, like an American thing.
That students aren't believed.
Yeah.
Well, there have been more cases of it in America.
But I just thought...
I think you're wrong in saying that, you know, there is this sort of perception that as we become more advanced as a species, if you like, that these sort of things are going to happen less. I think because of the internet, they're happening more. I interviewed on talk radio a woman from a campaign group called We Can't Consent to This. And she told me about some of the stuff that was being widely viewed by male students on the internet, porn, I thought to get some of the sort of porn that she was telling me, I won't go into all of it, but some of the porn that she was telling me about.
Yeah, don't go into all of it, because that truly would scar me, I think.
Yeah, but she told me that some of the porn that I would think, as a parent, was only available on the dark web, that you'd have to really, really, really search for it. And she was telling me some of the things that are on sites such as Pinterest, Instagram, Tumblr, all those sort of things. And these were acts such as acts that would could lead to strangulation. And she says, it's called We Can't Consent to This. So obviously they're campaigning to try and let women like yourself know that you don't have to consent to these acts. More and more when I was a student, I only knew what I'd seen in mainstream movies or whatever. Yeah. So there was no way I was going to look on things like strangulation as part of a normal sex act.
There's been tons of studies done into
what... would make it worse rather than better.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I think you're right, actually. I think I overlooked that. But, like, there's been tons of studies done into, like, what porn does to young males in terms of, like, just they don't view sex healthily anymore because it's, like, so out of... I don't want to say out of this world because that's, like, the wrong terms, but it's very, like, controversial type of things or whatever. And I think it's part of the thing is that, like, women aren't involved in the making of porn whatsoever, really. It's all made for men, by men, pretty much, exclusively.
Yeah, there are some feminist
websites, like Emma Watson spoke about one, like, famously in the news, that was, like, quite a big thing and stuff. But generally, they aren't. There was not a study, so you know how Spotify does, like, a year roundup of your most listened to songs and the most listened to ones on Valentine's Day, most listened to song across the year, most listened to album, all those kind of things at the end of the year. So Pornhub, which is, I assume, the most famous website, did a similar thing where they, you know, ranked videos and stuff. And it was actually quite interesting how a whole host of the videos were these things that I would be like, whoa, that's like mental, like far past like the 50 Shades of Grey, which is this very consumer. Yeah,
but even if you're saying
things.
You're saying whoa, you know, when you see these things, you know, do you feel that within a relationship, do you feel that you have control of what you consent to, or, you know, and you can say no?
I would hope so. But then I think you can say that as much as you want, but if you got into the position where you were very vulnerable with someone or someone was very manipulative, then I think it is more difficult to say no ever. But then it's also like, do you remember the story of the girl who was backpacking in Australia, who was killed? She was part of like a website that was like a BDSM website or whatever. I would still say that is not at all her fault, obviously. Like, I think that women can be into those kind of things just as much as men can, but
I think this campaign group I spoke to, they're campaigning against it being used in court. So it's quite obvious that some women may easily have
the defence was...
that she wants it ruled, you know, that we can't consent to this, wants it ruled out as a defence in court, basically, saying
a sex game that
went wrong. That, you know, she said it's not a sex game that went wrong,
There's a different thing. Like, there was loads of stories when that girl was killed and it was like such a tragedy or whatever that were about like it's not the same thing. Like, you have to really, really strangle someone for them to die of asphyxiation. Like, that's not a mistake, you know, that is with intent. And I think a lot of the dialogue surrounding it needed to say that more clearly and stuff.
But it's not just one girl. You know,
I'm just using that case as an example.
What I worry about as a parent, and I think what most parents will worry about, is that this sort of sexual behaviour is, and especially if you've got daughters, this sort of sexual behaviour is normalised. And the problem is if it's on Instagram and Tumblr and all these other things, it is normalised.
I think it's normalised for men, but not for women as well, which is the scary thing.
That is a scary thing.
Because, like, if you have such different opinions or views of what's normal and not, like, that is scary. And it's scary to think that you could be... because I can imagine, like, being in the position of kind of really sort of liking someone or whatever and kind of wanting to... and also wanting to seem like... I think there's a real pressure on women, which is...
to seem like cool.
Yeah, cool. I think there's a real pressure...
Like, you're not bothered.
Like, oh, you're casual, you're fun, whatever. Because I think there is a real pressure of, like, women, as we've become more, in inverted commas, liberated or whatever, in films and stuff, you want to seem like the cool girl who is up for anything and is just there to have fun or whatever like that. And it's... I think that's not always, like, a good thing. I think that is what would stop a girl from saying, like, oh, no, I actually don't want to do that. Part of being liberated is the ability to say, no, I actually want to be in a relationship, or no, I want to be celibate or something like that. I think that's part of it. But you see the idea of being free of the girls burning their bras as these women who are happy to do anything, which I think is wrong.
Burning the bras, that's a bit of a 70s reference.
Well, yeah, but you know that's where it started, didn't it, the 70s? They never actually burned their bras, though, did they? It's all a big...
I think there was.
I thought they didn't actually burn them. I thought there's a whole story about how they tried to burn them and then they couldn't get them to burn or something like
burn.
That.
No, it is always difficult to get a bra to burn. and it's always, you know, just as a warning, it's best to take it off first.
Oh, Dad.
Dad. Ruth, do you have anything amusing to tell me from the world of the University of York?
Yes, of course I do. So this is a Your Fashion, which I thought was quite funny.
Right. We want to say Your Fashion is a sort of confessions site for York University.
Yeah. What classifies as basic French? I sent a job application, I know basic French, and I know Bonchar. Is this basic or too basic? There was a lot of coronavirus Your Fashions that were, none of them were funny.
Were there? It's coronavirus. So that's a subject for humour within your university?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Oh, great. Tell us one of the unfunny coronavirus.
Oh, okay. Let me just find one then. Yeah, have aches and pains and a sore throat. Do I have coronavirus or am I overreacting? Top tip for all of you who are scared about getting the coronavirus. Are you sick? Just say no. Coronavirus can't enter your body without consent. So this is one that someone... posted as a bit of like a little meme on Your Fest about coronavirus. There was a lot of coronavirus-y related posts, but I think this one is probably the funniest. And then they just put, top tip for all of you who are scared about getting the coronavirus. Are you sick? Just say no. Coronavirus can't enter your body without your consent.
Excellent.
So that is... and then I've also got a kind of coronavirus-based York crush.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
It'll be so topical.
So they said, LR... stop setting posters on fire, referring to, I assume, the coronavirus posters, because I can't think what other ones. This is in one of the blocks at a certain college at the uni, which is kind of known for a lot of, like, antics going on there and everything. So they said, Ella, stop setting posters on fire and come set my loins on fire instead.
Oh, no, I like it.
Yeah.
And a meme at all?
Yes. I've got a meme as well. My two-month-old. I can't sleep, Dad. I'm afraid of Frankenstein. Me. Haha, don't you mean Frankenstein's monster? My three-month-old. I do not. Personally, I find unethical and irresponsible scientific practice far more terrifying than any physical being, and so should you.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed, Ruth. So we'll hopefully be back next week with another one. If you want to get in touch with us, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, that's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.